We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. Tonight we start with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Willis Jackson Bone. Then I interview Alexandra Michelle, who is a spiritual teacher. Then I have Pandora Peoples as a guest host. People are starting to head to the beach, and she's got some surf music. Stay tuned.
There were two newspapers in Macon when I was growing up. The Macon News was the afternoon newspaper, and the Macon Telegraph was the morning paper. In 1974, the two newspapers merged into the Macon Telegraph and News. The name changed to just the Macon Telegraph in 1990. We got the Macon paper every day, but on Sundays, Dad would buy the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Their slogan was, "Covers Dixie like the dew." It was a more robust paper, and it had a great magazine section. When I was about 10 years old, there was a story in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution magazine section about Crystal Lake, one of the most beautiful bodies of water in all of South Georgia, near the Arapahoe River in Irwin County, Georgia. It was a great story about this spring-fed, icy lake that had no water flowing into the lake and no water flowing out of the lake. The 100-acre natural Crystal Lake was operated as a water park with swimming, dancing, bowling, skating, water slides, and more. Then, buried in the article, was the story about how Crystal Lake used to be called Bone Lake. Some man named Willis Jackson Bone had owned it and had been hanged there. I mentioned this to my father, and his response was, "Yes, that was your great-great-great-grandfather." Wow! I was flabbergasted. Willis Jackson Bone and I share a birthday and two-thirds of a name. He owned and operated a grist mill in Irwin County, Georgia, during the Civil War. As a miller, he was exempt from having to serve in the Confederate Army. A community must have a miller to stay alive. He had moved to Irwin County from Elberton, Georgia, in the northeast part of the state, in 1858. He was an anti-war, pro-unionist activist. Needless to say, he did not have a lot of friends in Irwin County. In mid-February 1865, a group of Southern Unionists and a large number of residents and deserters led by Willis Jackson Bone assembled in Irwinville. The group passed a resolution declaring the county's return to the Union. Three cheers for Abraham Lincoln followed. Confederate sympathizers were chased out of town and threatened with death if they returned. Grandfather knew how to win friends and influence people. Not. The Emancipation Proclamation was issued on January 1, 1863. In early April 1865, my grandfather gave work to a former slave named Big Tony. A local justice of the peace, Jack Walker, saw Big Tony working on grandfather's land and attempted to tie him up to return him to his owner. A scuffle ensued. Grandfather shot and killed Mr. Walker. It should be noted that Mr. Walker was on grandfather's land carrying a gun. When Mr. Walker did not return home, his family went searching for him. When the search party arrived at grandfather's mill, allegedly the family seemed nervous. They separated the family and threatened to hang Willis Jackson's son, Zachariah Taylor Bone, age 15. He was also known as ZT. If ZT did not tell what he knew about the incident, there is also some documentation that ZT was tortured to make him talk. ZT told the search party what had happened and where the body was buried. It seems that Mr. Walker was not dead when he was buried. He tried to dig out of his grave. Searchers found one of Walker's hands reaching out of the mud. Justice in South Georgia was certain, sudden, and severe in 1865. Once Mr. Walker's body was found, a local Baptist minister and former judge, Jacob Young, organized a court of justice and proceeded to try grandfather. He was convicted and sentenced to be hung that day. Appeal? What appeal? A scaffold was erected at the edge of the pond under a large oak tree. Ropes were scarce in those days. There was a war going on. A local woman, Mrs. Hogan, had spun and woven a rope to be used on a bale of cotton. It was this rope that was used to hang grandfather. His last words were allegedly, "Take warning from me and don't come to what I have." Willis Jackson Bone was hanged near Bone Pond on April 20th, 1865. Willis Jackson was buried near the northwest corner of Bone Pond. His widow, Sarah, was notified to wind up their affairs, dispose of their property, and move out of the county. The land, 1,280 acres of it, was appraised at $600 and was sold for $90. There went the Bone family plantation. The Civil War ended 3 weeks later on May 13, 1865. Bone Pond became Crystal Lake and operated as a local swimming resort until the 1990s.
It is March 24th, 2021. Mystic Pete here with Alexandra Michelle. And I wanted to get you on the show because I specialize in this kind of middle tier of talent. Like, there's the celebrity people. Well, they won't return my call, so that's another reason. But also, these people on the way up, either in the arts or in the healing arts, there's a lot of very powerful people in this strata, and I just love bringing them to the attention of the world. And I feel like you're one of those people, Alexandra. You're this emerging healer who has a lot to say and a lot of talent, and you're helping a lot of people. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So just tell me a word about yourself.
Well, you've said it. I don't know that I really even consider myself a healer, although I think healing happens in working together. Yeah.
So what is it you do?
Well, I am a Kundalini activator. I offer a transmission of this particular frequency, which creates the conditions for one's own internal energy to then become awakened. So we all have a reservoir of this energy. It's a transpersonal energy. It's a what you could call a spiritual energy. It definitely has a feeling and an intensity and an expression that is discontinuous with what you would call your own personality. And when it becomes awakened or activated, it begins to move throughout your energy system and brings about changes, including healing, awakening to a larger energy, a larger awareness, a larger consciousness, again, beyond what we would normally consider our own identity, our own personality. And eventually it leads to profound liberation.
Well, so this is in the realm of energy healing, faith healing, medical intuition, but then you have your own
style?
Sure. Well, I would consider this more to be in the realm of spiritual teaching. So people don't come to me with an intention to heal necessarily, although I think that people on a spiritual journey are often discovering that they need healing, right? They're discovering that there's parts of them that have been neglected. And in this process, a lot of personal trauma does surface to be dealt with, to be integrated. But this is sort of the same transmission that you would get if you went to receive Shaktipat. So this is much closer to Shaktipat than it is to any traditional form of energy healing.
So that's something where, like, the guru touches your forehead and you just start seeing angels or having energetic experience.
Correct,
and
yeah.
And you're doing that.
Yes.
Booyah. Isn't that interesting? So you're not necessarily seeing cancer patients or people with real physical problems.
Correct.
You're seeing people who want more internal information.
Yes.
And want illumination to understand life better.
Yes.
And have more direction in life.
Exactly. That's perfectly stated. Yes.
Hmm.
Better than I could say it myself.
Well, can you give some examples, some anecdotes or stories about this happening so the listeners can really understand more of the details?
Yeah, absolutely. So Kundalini activation, as we're calling it, is closer to Shaktipat. So Shaktipat is a transmission of spiritual energy from one person to another. And the only difference between the person transmitting and the person receiving is that we've practiced this. You know, we've allowed for the transformation to happen, and we've cultivated and nurtured this spiritual energy and sort of prioritized its, what, you know, in Kundalini science, it's a rising. So this energy starts at the base of the spine, and it rises up the Shishumna, up the central channel, you know, if you're lucky. There's all different kinds of risings, and this energy moves through your body in all kinds of different ways. But in general, it rises up the Shishumna, up the spine, and it pierces and awakens and opens each of the chakras. And then once it enters into the head, it's in an upper process, and then you start to have experiences of samadhi and transpersonal awareness. And this all happens. This all happens in the context of a Kundalini activation class. So something that's really amazing, and to be completely honest, it's something that I'm just sort of discovering for myself and sort of figuring out through doing it and through observing what happens and through case studies. I'm sort of putting the pieces together, is this sort of process and the lineage that supports this energy, it's a much faster process and a more streamlined process than traditional classical Kundalini methods. And you,
like Kundalini yoga?
Kundalini yoga is completely different from this. Yeah.
Nothing to do with what you're doing.
Has nothing
to do with
what I'm
doing. That's
just
the name they're using for a style of yoga.
Exactly.
From Yogi Bhajan.
Yes.
But so Kundalini is talking about this inner energy, prana, this serpent that goes up the body of energy.
Exactly. Yes.
And that's what you're talking about.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so in the container, in the context of a class, you receive a transmission of this energy, and all signs and symptoms of a Kundalini awakening can be experienced in that hour of time. So you can have kriyas, which the word kriya means movement. So you can have physical movements or emotional movements and or mental movements. So profound self-realizations start to come through. Emotional catharsis starts to come through. And a lot of times this is paired, right? This deep grief that I didn't process as a 3-year-old, 7-year-old, 12-year-old, right, gets expelled from the system. And you can just imagine how much relief and how much more space comes when you start to move these things that have been waiting in escrow for an opportunity to be seen and felt.
Love that, waiting in escrow. I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice metaphor.
Yeah. And then the physical movements, you know, the physical movements is where there is stagnant or crystallized or contracted, compacted energies, not only in our muscles and our physical bodies, but in our energetic systems, through the meridians, through the nadis. And so you'll start to see people shaking and what looks like sort of convulsing. And then the other beautiful thing that happens is people will go into spontaneous yoga postures. So what I've sort of concluded is that most methods of yoga, including hatha yoga and pranayama, these are sort of, or not sort of, these are reverse engineered from spontaneous kundalini process. So the
I love what you're just saying. In other words, it's not the plow pose or downward dog that brings you to these energetic experiences. The energy experiences had people spontaneously do those positions, and then somebody brands it and turns it into a system.
Right.
Oh, that's a wow.
Yeah. And they
mind blown.
And they work. They work, you know. And especially the hatha yoga practices really prepare the body to go into these energetic states. So it's worthwhile to pursue those methods, especially before you meet a teacher that can share the energy with you. And so it's just, you know, the way that I always think about it is you don't know what you don't know. So until you're introduced to this frequency, you don't even know what's possible. But once it's activated in your system, it might not be done in one class, in 1 hour. Most people have to practice a few times, receive the transmission a few times, but it's an initiation and an activation that continues long after the class. So we're not building up codependency. It is indeed, you get activated and then that activation is yours to keep because it's your own internal energy. It just needs to be stimulated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think what you're saying, this is something very important and something missing. And we're kind of spiritually retarded, stunted. And people chase after, well, meditation or yoga classes to try to find that thing, and gurus, and chase after different cultures. Mm-hmm. They want to put on Indian clothing and say Indian words, or both Native American Indian and East Indian, or they want to dress up in these cultures to try to find this experience of internal awakening.
Yeah.
Now look, I like to dress up. I like to put on masks. I like to travel. I like to experience other cultures, but I just see so many of the people around here getting lost in the symbols of some kind of enlightenment experience, some kind of idea of it, some kind of playtime of it, but they're not really getting anywhere. And then they start to mythologize and build an altar to these other cultures or cultural practices. But, you know, come back 10 years later and they haven't moved ahead in their life at all. Mm-hmm. You know, they've gotten very good at chanting or something, but what you're saying is you're trying to go right to this inner experience of energetic liberation.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real thing people want.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to find out a little bit more about the details of your work. By the way, what's the best way to contact you?
If you really want to get in touch with me, I have email. I'll respond. It's most direct. It's alexandramichelle.kap@gmail.com. So at alexandramichelle.kap@gmail.
And they can always contact me, Mystic Pete, through social media, and I will connect anybody to Alexandra Michelle.
Very kind. Thank you.
But you've also, I believe, developed a series of steps for this initiatory process.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. You know, one of the things, it's sort of inherent in my nature to discover something and then find it in my research. So I was initiated through several different lineages, and then I had my own spontaneous awakening, and I observed the movements and the changes and sort of the nature of that awakening, and it was indeed revolutionary. You know, I would say it bordered on being tumultuous. And so a part of me that wanted to streamline that experience for others started doing research and making notes on what it was exactly that moved within me. And there are definitely strategies that support that movement. The way that I really like to think about it is just like every human being, regardless of gender or culture or age, digests food in the same way. It's a biological process. Every human being awakens in the same way by virtue of Kundalini process. It's a bio-spiritual evolutionary energy that's within each and every one of us. So there are, and even though everybody's path is unique, their karma's unique, what they're going to have to look at and deal with and work with and integrate is unique on the outside, there are methods and there's sort of stages in awakening that are readily recognizable within everyone. So I've put together several different subjects that are supportive to a newly awakened person. Like, on the journey, this is what you need in your knapsack. So there's inner work processes. The process of becoming more conscious is you become conscious of everything, right? You become conscious of the energetic nature of things, the way that maybe time isn't exactly what we've always thought it was. You can awaken to clair abilities that you formerly didn't have, and all of these sort of more popular, well-marketed spiritual experiences that we're seeking. But you also become more conscious of the things inside that are needing your consciousness, right? They've been buried. Yes, so becoming more conscious includes seeing the things in your subconscious and your unconscious, and things that are in your subconscious, unconscious, are unconscious for a reason, right? At the point at which these things, traumas, ways of being came into our system, it was too much for us to process. Mm-hmm. So indeed, having this energetic intelligence awakened within you means necessarily that there will be many opportunities for self-discovery, both in the what we would consider positive and what we would normally consider negative. And so I offer tools. I offer what I would consider like self-inquiry methods, systems of integrating what needs to be integrated along this path, right? We all know that the spiritual journey is towards oneness, but you have to achieve internal oneness before you can achieve mystical oneness, or maybe in conjunction, right? One informs the other.
What I really like about your approach, Alexandra Michelle, is that you're in process. Yeah. I do work similar to you. I'm an energy healer. Mm-hmm. And we're both in this pool of very talented people in Los Angeles doing this kind of work. So there's maybe that pressure or competition or interaction that enhances the scene. It's like like a bunch of people doing this, and we're all kind of pushing and pulling, and we're all growing together at some level, rather than just being off alone and just getting what you can. But where I'm getting at is that there's plenty of people putting on a show of this. They just want people's money or their sex, and you know, they have the big turban, and they're very good at talking slowly. Mm-hmm. I find this is important for gurus, and they stare at you in the eye, and they don't say much of it. Like, you can listen to an hour or two, and they haven't said much, but they're talking slowly. So that's key. But what I like about you is you're not, there's no pretense here. You're not putting on a show. You're not trying to, like, you're an initiate. You have powers. You have talents. Maybe you're not, you know, the Buddha yet. And, you know, I'm not the Bodhisattva either. I can't walk on water yet. When I go to the ocean, I bring a bathing suit because I know I'm going to go in the water. So, good joke. So I think this is a mature form of spirituality. You don't have to be a perfected being, and neither do I, to offer really important and valuable teachings to many people.
Thank
you. Even like mid-level priests or something, fine. Or even the elder priests, but we don't have to be fully enlightened to have important transmissions for other people. And I think those people who put on that show, yeah, stay away from them.
Yeah.
They're just, there's something phony going on.
Yeah.
None of us are, can raise the dead yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You've brought up something extremely important to me, actually. And having been in Los Angeles and amongst this scene for some time, there was a real disgust that I actually had to work with and transmute and alchemize and integrate that was preventing me from moving forward because I didn't want to be lumped in a category with them. And there was an evolution of my own. Well, it's sort of the heat got turned up and I got really uncomfortable. You know, there's some force in my life that's making me do this beyond my own personality. So I had to make that movement towards offering.
You felt called to this.
Called.
But you didn't want to get involved with the BS.
Correct. Yes. Yes. And I was allowing my own judgment, my own distaste for the BS to prevent me from moving forward. Luckily, that time was short-lived. And what I, so in response to what I observed, I have a policy, right? You certainly don't have to be enlightened, but what I personally do have to be is in integrity. And that's the next best thing to being fully enlightened if you are teaching and seeing clients and doing this sort of initiatory work. And so what that looks like for me is full transparency. If a student or a client ever asks me a question about my own journey or my own vulnerabilities, I tell them exactly what is true for me. And the other reason I felt clear in moving forward into this position I now find myself is that I did pass a gateway where my own emotional volatility stabilized. So I do feel an inner spaciousness on an emotional level that allows me to successfully hold space for other people pretty reliably.
Well, I see, I love the way this conversation is going. We're going to get back to your own personal work, but I think a very important thing to discuss, because everybody now is a healer and a guru and has the answer to love and sex and money and dandruff, what is authentic? Who are people we can trust and rely on with so much kind of nonsense out there, making those of us who are sincere look kind of wrapped into this idiocy? So, like, what is honest, reliable, sincere spirituality that really has value? Now, I've known a lot of rabbis and priests and ministers and clerics, and there is this other pressure on the clergy to be perfect people, even outside of the guru New Age thing. It's like you can see they take on a certain tone of voice, and now they're the minister, and they have to be some kind of perfected person and an exemplar to the community. But that also is kind of phony, because even priests and even these people are human beings and have faults. And when you put on this kind of facade of perfection, everybody's looking to you. But there's shadow stuff there too. And like a lot of these people sometimes get into trouble or they're having sex with, this kind of weirdness comes out sideways.
Yeah, it's repressed.
Yeah, because that's the word. It's because they can't just be normal human beings that are honest and vulnerable and flawed. But yes, you're still a powerful teacher. So I love what you're saying, that you're honest, you're down to earth, you don't try to put on some kind of show, but you can still be an important facilitator for people and a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, putting on a show it's actually... I can't do it. I get so exhausted. No, seriously, because I think in my innocence and in my immaturity, especially at the outset of moving into this role, I was under the illusion that I needed to be perfect in order to be a valuable facilitator and my system. So when, you know, for me, everything is Kundalini process, right? There's so many things spontaneously happening within me that is not devised by my ego, right? I'm not, so for me, all, most, if not all of my evolution is spontaneous. It's from within. These things just happen. And
you know, there's something sweeping through you, whether it's the angels or God, that's just moving you along.
Correct.
And you're surfing the wave.
Correct. Yes. Beautifully said. And so this energy has an integrity that I cannot mess with.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So
like your angels are calling you to act honorably. If you want to be part of that flow, you have to have morality to it.
Yeah.
And no BS.
Correct. And so for me, what that means is I pull up a chair. I use this image, right? We all have parts. We all have pieces inside of us. Yes, we have the angel. We have the perfect mother. We have the perfect best friend, the perfect partner. We have the good child. We have all of these noble pieces that we're all very willing to put on display, but we also have the liar inside of us, the manipulator, the cheater, the ones that are afraid, right? That have learned how to get their needs met in any way possible. And we have to take into consideration what it means to grow up in a society where conformity is still very much the rule, right? We sacrifice our own individuality to fit in, to get love, to be safe. And so what this does is it creates different, all of these different parts inside of us. And so I use this image. So of course there are inner children that are arrested in their development at the time of a trauma. And those are very easy to give love to, right? But do we have love for our inner teenager who's causing destruction, right? And so I use this image. I bring all of these parts when I discover them. And this happens spontaneously through the movement of this energy. I take them out of their cell, out of the basement, out of the dungeon, and I give them a seat at the table. And so I have an archetypal mother, and that's the archetype that works best for me. I have an archetypal mother that is in charge. So I don't have to act out of unconsciousness to these parts of me that are trying to get their needs met. I don't repress them. I'm aware of them, but I don't have to act destructively.
I love it. By the way, you're very well spoken, Alexandra Michelle, at alexandramichelle.cap@gmail.com. So that's how people can find you. So I said I'm a healer too. I have clients. And I would say my work is very intense. It's very powerful and it moves people ahead very quickly. People jump ahead in life. But the biggest problem I find is, referring to what you just said, if you want to move ahead in life, you have to do the homework. You have to unpack it. You have to face down all the pains and traumas and suffering that you just stored in the closet back there to deal with at some later point. And most people don't want to do that work. So you as a facilitator can open that door. And so what's coming up? Some sadness, some rage, some pain in your heart, all kinds of things emerge. Most people do not want to deal with it. They don't want to do the homework. Thanks, profound session. Well, we just traveled around the galaxy a couple of times, but yeah, I'd just rather smoke some marijuana and turn on my TV, and I just don't really want to deal with all this stuff. And again, come back 10 years later, they haven't moved ahead in life at all.
Yeah.
But so that's the challenge I find, is that you know, the hard work of self, it's hard to find people who want to do the hard work of self. But people who do, they can move ahead very quickly in life. Whatever you know, if you want to find your soulmate or make money or business or creative opportunities, this is all possible in not too much time if you're okay doing the homework of it.
2 points to that very true statement that I certainly have encountered within myself and within other people. I do think it's human nature to try to mitigate pain, right? Especially if we've already mitigated it, and, right? Stored it in the closet, like you said, or more likely on our shoulders, right?
In our body.
In our upper back, yeah.
Right.
So I definitely went through a dark night of the soul period, and I'm sure it was more like 3 or 4 trips through the underworld. Dark night of the soul. It was no laughing matter. But the redemption in that for me was that I had a taste of grace, an extreme opening. I would say it was like a Kensho experience. It was sort of a spontaneous launch.
Kensho. Kensho.
Correct. Yeah. So it's a taste of what could be called, I don't know, samadhi. It was like a form of samadhi, but...
By the way, that's the word they use in Zen Buddhism to describe like an initial enlightenment experience.
Yeah.
Kensho.
Yeah. You had to use the E word. I wouldn't permit myself, but...
The E word. I'm a rebel like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had this opening into reality beyond my own mental modifications and my own pain body telling me my limitations. And so because I had that experience, that initial opening, when I came back to do the integration work, I knew the virtue and the value of going through that. I knew what was on the other side, and I knew how very worth it was. And so I think what happens with this transmission experience, so you come to a class, you lay down, music plays, and then I transmit this energy, I hold this frequency. And then in that moment, a lot of people have this profound opening, maybe not to the degree that I had. And how can you compare something so individual and beyond words anyways? But you have this opening into consciousness, and that sort of empowers you to then go back into the inner worlds to do this reconciliation work, this homework, as you call it, which it's exactly that. And then secondly, I think that's why teachers... It's so good to have a teacher who inspires, right? You hold that example, you hold that encouragement for people, and it can embolden them to move in that direction, even trudging through the mud. And so part of what I actually share in my process, in my mentorship process, one of the steps, or you know, one of the things I give is we discuss Joseph Campbell's monomyth, so the hero's journey. And if you actually read that book, you can tell that every hero's journey, every mythical journey is the process of enlightenment, right? It's initiation, then you go into the underworld where you become conscious of all of the things, and there's the trials, and you meet the monsters and the inner goddess, and you reconcile with the father. Yeah, exactly. And then, well, but what's the point of going through this? You come out on the other side with a gift to share. And so it's so extraordinarily worth it to me. And I also think that those that are ready have hit a version of rock bottom, you know, and that really does, it helps one surrender. For me, I had, I was just like, I was so depressed and anxious. The toxicity of my psychological landscape was such that it was so much better for me to look inside and actually face all of these things than to just be crippled and debilitated by them on an unconscious level. And so I think if you can have leaders sort of normalizing this, then that... It's necessary. I think it's necessary for us collectively, and I think we're going through a collective dark night of the soul right now, and more people that just call it like it is, the better. And that doesn't mean that you have to actively suffer. You know, there's no... I think people have this idea that in order to process, there has to be this demonstration of grief and suffering. It can be more subtle, you know? It can be... You can be simultaneously grateful and full of love for the process, full of love for yourself. It's a trip to feel, you know, to be getting into your deepest grief and at the same time be so grateful for the fierce grace that is facilitating this. And at least, you know, maybe there is a way to bypass this stage, but I certainly haven't experienced it. And so that is what I teach and that is what I facilitate.
Wow. Yeah, this process of confronting your inner archetypes, the deities, wrestling down the deities. I'm a cook, and the deity I most revere these days is Haravati. It's a joke. Cheese. It's a kind of cheese.
It's a cheese
sorry,
joke.
I've been waiting to tell that joke for months. Okay, I forget it. I'll edit that out. But I'm very happy with what's happening here in this conversation. We're talking about what you do and the doors you can open for people. We're talking about the personal process of liberation and sorting out what we need to, and sometimes that's a lot of work. And we're also talking about the meta level of what is a teacher, what is a good teacher? Do teachers need to be perfect and have that glassy-eyed stare and talk really slowly? Or can they just be regular human beings? And anyway, I would suggest, you know, find people who are able to help you as healers, but also they have a good sense of humor, and they don't take themselves too seriously, and they're comfortable sharing about their faults and just being a regular person. I think that keeps things very grounded and down to earth. This is a mature conversation, and one that we need to be having, like not only what the process is, but how do you find that process and not get mixed up with people who would take advantage of you? Well, Alexandra, Michelle, any closing words on this beautiful spring day? Breezy.
It is. It's wonderful. I'm so glad it's spring now. Yeah, I think the closing words would be, if you are aspiring to know more, right, to fill that intuitive inner knowing that you, there's something more to this life. There's a way to feel really, really well, really good inside, really fulfilled, really connected to your purpose. All you have to do is make the decision in this moment that that's what you want. And it's a decision that happens automatically, right, on a soul level. And then you can also make it like on your personality level consciously right now. If you make that decision, it's done. You'll be initiated. The path will be revealed to you. And there is no more worthwhile journey, in my opinion, in my experience.
Wise words. People can find Alexandra Michelle at Alexandra Michelle, period, K-A-P. So that was one of the systems you've been trained in.
Yes.
CAP, K-A-P.
Yes.
At gmail.com.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been extraordinary. We'll do it again.
Okay.
Hello out there. Good evening, Los Angeles. You're listening to KXLU 88.9 FM live streaming at KXLU.com. This is the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Pandora People's guest DJing tonight, sharing a few of my favorite tunes. We're in a heat wave. Can you feel it? So we're going to surf it with a totally radical surf set. First up, Apache 65 from Davy Allen and the Arrows.
Thank you. short and the nights are long.
Hey, hey, hey out there. From the top of that set, we heard Apache 65 from Davy Allen and the Arrows. That was followed by California Sun from the Palma Violets and Surf Rider from the Lively Ones. Up next, Tarantino from Los Cuchillos.
por el camino donde sale el sol y las aves lucen de bello color. Voy caminando para encontrar la felicidad de mi corazón, porque ya se fue y me dejó solo y triste, sin compasión. Triste estoy porque ya se me fue para alegrar mi pobre, pobre corazón. Ella se me fue y me dejó solo y triste, sin compasión. Triste estoy porque ya no está aquí para alegrar mi pobre, pobre corazón. Por el camino donde sale el sol y las aves lucen de bello color. Voy caminando para encontrar la felicidad de mi corazón. Por eso a Jamaica le digo adiós, para olvidar este triste dolor. Mi corazón muy triste se encontró, porque la nena que más quiero me dejó.
That was Tarantino from Los Cuchillos. We heard Luna Luau from Los Acapulco and Adios a Jamaica from Los Hooligans. There's an awesome event happening April 24th. It's the Road to Earth Day Beach Festival, and everyone's welcome at Echo Joe's Trash Pickup. It's at the Faces Collective stage at the Santa Monica Pier. We are all one. Love each other. Thanks for having me on, Mystic Pete. This is Pandora Peoples signing out.
We are coming to the end of a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can find me at mysticpete.com or Mystic Pete on social media. We started the show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Willis Jackson Bone. Then I interviewed Alexandra Michelle, who is a spiritual teacher. And thank you, Pandora Peoples. We're ready to go surfing. Thanks so much for listening. Mystic Pete out!